Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. This is hour two for the 16th of January. And of course, if you listen regularly, you know that we try to cover as many different topics in the news and then special interest dimensions of our lives as believers and talking about those things from a Christian standpoint and doing so as we fix our eyes on Jesus together. I am your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner. Rachel Sutton in studio with me, who produces the show and does such a great job with all of the sound, keeping everything moving smoothly and flowing smoothly. And Paul Perot in the newsroom. That brings us all these topics of the day and books so many great guests. And, of course, one of the really important news items is that we are in the middle of January right now. And I have been confused about why it seems to me that the sun is actually coming up later and later. And, Bill English, you're in studio with us right now. Rachel Sutton and I were having a debate during the break. I think somehow the world has tipped on its axis in a different kind of way, because I understood that winter solstice was like December 21st-ish. We should have longer days moving forward. But I don't know about you. When I look outside, it is now 5 minutes past 7 here Central Time, and right. I see no evidence of any kind of star rising in the sky that might warm up this Earth. There's nothing here, Bill, and Rachel seems to think it's rising. I don't know. Maybe I just got the seasonal affective disorder or something.
Oh, no, I don't think that's seasonal affective. That's not a mood disorder. That would be more in the delusional area.
Really?
That's what I would call it. Yeah. You look outside, you can see the orange. A little bit on the horizon there, and that's the sun rising.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Rachel, Bill seems to be on your side in this, and I'm starting to lose maybe just the... I'm worried that Bill is going to bring some perspective that might be false all morning on this.
Well, clearly the sky is like turquoise right now, so there is hope. There's hope in the sky.
Now, if you're listening this morning, please feel free to text in the studio your perspective about the sun rising here at 877-933-2484. It is rough in January in Minnesota, all around the Midwest, to try to get up in these mornings. And, Bill, in all fairness, I can't remember the last time we saw the sun in the Midwest. I know there's a lot of snow happening down in Iowa over the course of this week. It does get rough this time of year, doesn't it?
It does. It really does. My wife commented on that yesterday as we were traveling back from the airport. My daughter, Anna, is literally over the Pacific Ocean right now on her way to New Zealand for YWAM for 5 months. And on the way back, Kathy said something to the effect of, she doesn't know how people in Seattle do it. How do you live with 4 to 6 months of cloudiness?
Yeah.
And I don't know, because I don't have SAD. I don't have seasonal affective disorder. My wife does.
Well, it is a tricky thing, obviously, during this time of year. So we're with you this morning here on Faith Radio Mornings as we're all struggling through the weather in the winter. But regardless of the season, regardless of the time and the temperature, we will continue to fix our eyes on Jesus together. And who better than Bill English to do that with us on Wednesday mornings like this as we get into our segment on BibleandBusiness.com. And Bill, after a short break here, let's get into Ecclesiastes 5. You sent me an interesting Bible passage about what we can learn from that passage of Scripture relative to our finances. So more to come with Bill English next on Faith Radio Mornings. About 9 minutes past the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. One of my favorite times of the week here on a Wednesday morning like this is to be joined by Bill English in studio, who is the longest running in-studio guest for Faith Radio Mornings. Yeah. Bill, that's quite a title that you hold here.
I didn't know that was a title, but yeah, it's been, I'm on my, fifth year, sixth year, something like that.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of different iterations of the show, a lot of programming, and yet you've had a consistent voice about business and Bible. And I learned last week, Bill, that you actually have a Master's of Divinity degree and that you have some fluency in Hebrew. Do I have that correct?
That is correct. I have both of them are an MA in psychology and an MDiv, both of them from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School.
Well, I love your perspective and how you bring so much of the Bible into our lives as business people as well. And before we get into some of the topics out of Ecclesiastes, I want to ask you just about our partial government shutdown. We had a person on the program at the end of last hour, Hugh Welchel of the Institute of Faith, Work, and Economics, and he was making the point that government never really seems to get smaller. You sort of get used to a way of life. You get used to the amount of people that you have. I know as private families, we get used to the amount of money that we have. It gets really hard to cut back, doesn't it? And what Hugh's point was is that as difficult as the shutdown is right now, and it's impacting so many people, and to stay mindful of that, and yet he was making the point as well that our government has gotten so large that maybe having some people move from government to private enterprise would be a better situation overall for our country.
Our government is too entwined in our economy, in my opinion. Our government has too much scope and influence. But like any other organism, government has a self-interest, and all organisms have a self-interest towards growth, towards self-preservation, so forth and so on. And so as difficult as the shutdown is for the 800,000 people who I sympathize with, who are not getting paychecks, the reality is that they live a life different than everybody else because the government rarely doesn't pay them. If they go out into private sector, they'll find out that jobs are never secure. I don't care what company you're at, big or small, and they would find out that life is more uncertain. And so government jobs bring a lot of certainty because the government has the power to use the force of law to take money from you and me and give it to them for work and for their labor, right? So my opinion is that this is showing just how intertwined government is with our economy and with our society. And I think it's too much.
Well, and private enterprise, Bill, can run at a loss or maybe some deficit spending for a short period of time with the prospect of investing in future growth because private enterprise can create wealth and create growth. And the government just doesn't have that same capacity to create growth in that way. So this ongoing deficit spending and getting bigger and bigger and bigger and being in the red every year by billions of dollars gets pretty tricky long term for any kind of enterprise.
Yeah, but what can government create? I mean, think about it. Government can create money. And so if government wants to, they can just turn up the printing presses or sell more treasuries or do whatever it is that they want to do, and they can create money. I mean, the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve in 2007 was something like $800 million, and today it's something like $5.2
trillion. That's amazing.
You know, the Federal Reserve just created money. And what I'm surprised at is that we haven't had hyperinflation. And I think the reason for that is because we haven't had enough velocity on that money to move it around the economy enough to create it. But in the long run, the government has the power to do what it wants to do, and it can damage whoever it wants to damage except itself. Now, in our society and the way things work, it damages business too much. It'll end up damaging itself. But I think those are long-term trends that most current-day politicians on both sides of the aisle don't really care about.
Yeah, I think it's one of the things that this conversation between you and me reveals is how much money really does, as the saying goes, makes the world go round, unfortunately, for so many of us. And as we talk about money this morning and some lessons from Ecclesiastes 5 that you've developed and sent, one of those first lessons from that chapter in Ecclesiastes is that if you love money and wealth, you'll never have enough. And we see this, again, in families. We see this in private enterprise. We see this in the government. If that is your focus, there's never a level of satisfaction that you get to.
Yeah, and on the government front, if you love power, you'll never have enough.
Right.
Right, and we've seen men throughout the years and women throughout the years who love power and just never had enough. So if you don't have enough money and you love it, you'll never have enough. So what's the answer? Right? Don't love money.
Right. Right. And that's tricky to do because there is a sense in which we believe in the illusory stability of it. We think if we just have enough money, our lives are going to be stable and fine moving forward. We'll be safe and provided for and protected. And that is such an illusion because then when that bubble bursts, as it inevitably does for so many, you're left in sort of the rubble and your whole view of what creates safety is really called into question.
Yeah. What this whole concept of financial security I recoil against because I think it's a farce. I think being financially secure is a farce, and I don't care who you are. And I know all the financial planners out there right now are probably yelling at their radios and disagreeing with me, and that's fine. But as Christians, our security should never be in our finances. It should be in the Lord. And it just seems to me that when Christians run around and say, hey, you can become financially secure, to me that is a lie. It is an absolute lie, because the Bible tells us that wealth is fleeting. Wealth can go away today. And there are things happening in this economy, and I think of the national debt like you alluded to earlier. There are things happening in this economy now that if the right triggers were to be put into place, everybody's wealth could be wiped out in a matter of a few weeks. So don't be prudent about how you plan your money, but don't place your security in it.
Yeah, so what is, because we have to deal with our finances day in and day out as people and families and in businesses, Bill. Yeah. And so this isn't an invitation to stop thinking about money in any way, shape, or form.
No,
but it sounds
no.
like you're inviting us to reframe our understanding and our relationship with money as we use it to somehow, and it sounds like it needs to be a pretty regular practice to be able to say, I'm not going to find my security in the money, even though I have to deal with it day in and day out.
Yeah, it's a tool. It's a method of barter and exchange, and there is a proper place for saving for the future, so that when you are older and you can't work as much, you have some resources there.
And on the flip side of this, Bill, I think about the people who are living paycheck to paycheck and maybe wondering where their next meal might come from. And so it's one thing to speak from the perspective, maybe as you and me are this morning, that while things can get rough financially, I'm not currently concerned, in fairness, about eating later today. But, boy, it's a different standpoint. I got to say, if you're wondering about where the next paycheck's going to come and what happens from that. And it does. This is a trickier situation maybe than we're even aware of.
You know, I came out of my business in 2014 with a whole truckload of debt because I had to sell it at a loss. So I'm not a rich man.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like to live hand to mouth. Been doing it literally for about 6 years now. It's a really tough place, but an enviable place to be when you're genuinely resting in your trust in God to provide for you. When you realize that your job is not as secure as God's promises, when you realize that God loves you more than you love yourself, for heaven's sakes, and that he has promised to provide, there's a security there that you can't get any other way.
Yeah, there's so much to this. It really is more complex than just some of the sound bites of just do X and Y and your life will be happy and feastful. There's a lot to all this. And Bill, we'll take a short break and continue to get into Ecclesiastes 5 a little bit. That first point being that from verses 10 and 11, if you love money and wealth, you'll never have enough. The next point from verse 11 is that if you do have some wealth, it can attract, in your description, some human leeches. And how do we handle that when people maybe want to be in relationship with a person who has money and some of the situation of that? So we'll get Bill English's insight on those topics and more next on Faith Radio Mornings. It's about 20 minutes past the hour, and we're having a conversation with Bill English of BibleandBusiness.com this morning about some lessons we can learn from Ecclesiastes 5. Bill, before the break, we talked a little bit about loving money and wealth, and if you do, you will never have enough. It's sort of this illusion that we lean into for our sense of contentment and peace. Another lesson we can learn from Ecclesiastes 5 from verse 11 is that wealth really has a capacity to attract people around us that may otherwise not want to be in relationship with people of wealth, but boy, they start coming like moths to a flame at that point, don't they?
Yeah, you remember the Blood, Sweat, and Tears song from the 60s?
Yes, of course.
Whenever you have money, you have lots of friends, right?
That's very true. Yeah, so what do you see in this situation, too? If you are a person that's listening this morning and you have some money and people are coming around you for that reason and they'll leave you just as quickly if you don't, well, how do you handle this kind of situation?
What I suggest is that you say, I only donate to, excuse me, to organizations. I don't necessarily donate to individuals. And that way, people understand that you're going to work with organizations who work with people rather than just trying to hand out a $20 or a $50 or $100 bill here and there.
Yeah, a somewhat related item, but I think it's something that many people who've been in churches for a long period of time may have experienced, is that there tends to be somehow more credibility given, more time given, more energy given to those people who donate a lot of money to the church. And so this can be a bit of a reverse. So many people who end up on elder boards are those that are seen as invested because they've given a lot of money to the church. But is there maybe some warning signals in that as well?
Yeah, I would say that those who flaunt their wealth probably shouldn't be on a board. That's why the really mature Christians who have a lot of money, you never know that they have it. Right.
Yeah, you really don't.
You don't.
But
so
there is a sense in which across the board, money really can put people in positions where they start making the decisions on any number of levels in many different organizations. There's something about it that seems to sort of attract power.
Yeah, well, that's where I was going to go with this. Money in our society equals power. That's why you'll see especially older guys who have a lot of money, they always have some young arm candy around them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's because that money attracts power. It attracts certain elements in our society that in other societies in days past it probably wouldn't attract.
Yeah, we see another lesson out of Ecclesiastes 5 here, Bill. It's your third one, that wealth can be hoarded. And as it is hoarded, it actually brings harm to the owner. And this seems a little counterintuitive because there's a sense in which, gosh, if I can just make sure I have enough and everything is sustained, as we've talked about earlier this morning, I'll be healthy and prosperous. But that kind of hoarding actually brings harm, doesn't it?
It really does. Three ways that it becomes harmful to the owner. Number one, the wealth becomes unproductive. And you can make wealth productive by either investing it and putting it to work in your business or another business, or you can make it productive by actually giving it back to the kingdom of God and reproducing that way. The five loaves and two fishes comes to mind there. And so you make your wealth productive. Just don't sit on it, because if you just sit on it, that's me. That's my phone. I'm sorry. I didn't mute it this morning. But if you sit on it, it will become a preoccupation, because then you'll be worried about how you keep it safe. And how do you make sure that it's still there, because you don't want it to go away? And you see extremely wealthy people oftentimes spend a lot of time and money on securing their money and their wealth. And to me, that's just a vicious cycle that you don't want to get into. Third way, real quick, Ecclesiastes says it could also become lost. And when it becomes lost through like theft, fire, government action, bad economy, whatever, wealth can go away pretty quick. And so It can harm the owner if you hoard it.
Well, I think what's fascinating about your insights into this, Bill, is that when I think about maybe being up at night with a bit of anxiety about the money, it sounds like it can be coming from two different angles. One is if you're wondering where the next paycheck is going to come from or where your food is going to. There can be a lot of worry and anxiety, understandably so, about that. But it sounds like for people who have been hoarding their wealth and have a lot of wealth, they also might be up at night worrying that it's going to go away tomorrow. So it does speak that having enough money is not necessarily the calming of the soul we want it to be, and it's just, boy, this whole thing is tricky, isn't it?
You know, Proverbs, give me neither poverty nor riches, right? Another passage in Proverbs, give me my daily bread. There's something to be said for not being extremely poor and not being extremely rich, just being kind of a middle-of-the-road guy. And, yeah, you got maybe a little bit of money, but you know you're always going to have to work, and you know you're never going to be financially independent, a la how I've defined that here earlier, and you know that your life is really in God's hands, and we're only here for a few days, and then we're like a wisp, and we go away. And so why should we worry so much about wealth?
You know, I'm in the university setting week in and week out, Bill, and with the spiraling costs of university education,
that's
gone through the roof. And part of what I've seen in the rippling effect of that is the impact on families as they're raising their kids. There has been so much energy devoted to and given to trying to build the resume of our children so that there's enough money moving forward for them to go to college or maybe get a scholarship. And at ages 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, kids are incredibly overscheduled just to try to get them into whether it's music or a sport or some sort of academic field that ultimately 10, 12, 15 years down the road will provide some kind of academic scholarship. I mean, we are worrying about money and it's driving things on so many different levels, again, for understandable reasons. And is there a stronghold here in this whole thing?
Well, there is. And the debt that these kids come out of college with in my estimation, immoral.
Yeah.
It's just what we're doing to our younger generation. I'm talking globally now. What we're doing to our younger generation by putting them into debt to get an education, I think is immoral. It's not, it would be hard to justify that on biblical grounds. Now, look, I know all the admission counselors, and look, we're on the radio that's owned by a Christian college.
Of course.
Right? So
of course.
I'm cognizant of that.
Yeah.
But all the admission counselors, I'm sure, are crying, wait a minute, kids go to a 4-year college, they're going to be able to earn more money, so forth and so on. I get all of that. Then there's got to be a better way to do the 4-year private college than simply putting the kids in debt. There's got to be a better way. And as a church, and I'm talking global here, at least across America, as a body of Christ, we need to figure this out, because we have guys coming out of seminary, $40,000, $50,000, $80,000 in debt. Well, what are they going to do with an MDiv and $80,000 of debt?
Yeah.
You know, what are they going to do?
Absolutely. And
they're going to go work for UPS is what they're going to do.
Absolutely. And the debt load is so substantial that it often crushes even possibilities for them moving forward. And to your point, and working at the University of Northwestern St. Paul here, I know that there are so many efforts afoot to try to figure out how can we make this more affordable. Things just spiraled beyond almost anybody's control in some ways that people just even foresee. And now there's this backpedaling that we need to do, because the university education it can be such a beautiful place to really learn and grow.
Thing. It's a wonderful thing. But, you know, the admission counsel over at Bethel told me, look, he says, the average student coming out of Bethel has $38,000 of debt.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's a nice BMW, if you ask me.
One more point to get to here out of Ecclesiastesville, and that is, what is good and proper out of verses 18 through 20 and finding satisfaction in one's labor?
Yeah, you know, when God gives us wealth, whatever he gives us, Ecclesiastes say we should be content with it, and we should enjoy it, and we should accept our lot in life. Thank God for what we have. We're only here for a few days. After that, we go to heaven. Let's focus on the real treasure, the treasures that we're laying up for ourselves in heaven. Let that motivate us, and let's just use money here as a tool to get through this life. But don't really worry about amassing a lot of wealth here. It's all going to go away at some point anyways.
Well, thanks as always for your insight here on a Wednesday morning and just your faithfulness to the show over all these years. We really appreciate what you bring each Wednesday morning here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Well, you're welcome.
Take a break here for Breakpoint next and some bottom of the hour news and preview what's coming up in the second half of this hour for Faith Radio Mornings. Interesting news out of Minnesota here, where Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar, who seems to be growing in popularity and respect in Washington, D.C., is considering making a 2020 presidential run on the Democratic side of it. There's been a number of candidates that have already announced their plans to run for 2020. I think we're going to see maybe upwards of 20, 25 candidates that will take on President Trump in the 2020 election cycle. Yesterday, Dr. Rosemary Stein joined us on the program and talked about caring for our kids even when they dislike us and giving them truth about important topics.
There's nothing greater. I mean, it sounds hokey, I know, but there's nothing greater to belong to than our own families. If you sit down around the table, if you look at your kids in the eye, then there's a much less chance that they're going to do something that you disapprove of. And so I think we take for granted that our kids need that, and that they need that from the people who love them the most. And you as parents, nobody's going to love your kids the way that you love them now. So sit down with them, talk to them, even when they shrug their shoulders and they do what teenagers do and they act like, you know, being around you is the worst thing on earth. Just go through that and you know, just love them anyway, just like Jesus does to us. We do that to him, so why can't we do it to our kids and love them anyway and be with them anyway and give them the right messages anyway?
Great comments from Dr. Rosemary Stein, as always, here on Faith Radio Morning. Certainly appreciate her wisdom and insight as she walks us through how we can parent our kids from a spiritual and psychological and social perspective. If you want to hear more of what Dr. Stein had to say, just head to myfaithradio.com and search for yesterday's program. Certainly you'll catch her entire segment. Well, up next here in just a minute, after a short break, I'll be joined by Wayne Peterson of Reach Beyond Ministries and Tim Tomlinson, who's the president of Bethlehem College and Seminary. And we're going to talk about some of the different dimensions of missions around our world, and specifically the opening of a major church for the Coptic Christians in Egypt.
Parents often approach me and ask how they should be training their kids to survive in today's culture. It's a great question. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Here are some of the core areas for parents to focus on. Train your teen to handle rejection and disappointment by allowing them to experience both. Train your teen to appreciate hard work. Train them to make wise decisions by working through the consequences of poor ones. Train them to bounce back from mistakes. Train them to handle money by giving them a checkbook early on. And finally, train them to choose the path of integrity, honesty, and keeping their word. Those aren't my insights. They come straight from the Bible. Mom, Dad, let's help our kids know how to survive in today's culture.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Check out his latest resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
God of mercy, sweet love of mine, I have surrendered to your design.
It's about 19 minutes before the top of the hour here on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and delighted to be joined on the line at this time by both Wayne Peterson, president of Reach Beyond Ministries, as well as Tim Tomlinson, who's the president of Bethlehem College and Seminary. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Peter. Good to hear from you.
So both of you have some pretty substantial ties to the University of Northwestern St. Paul, as well as KTS Faith Radio Ministries. Wayne, let's start with you. Remind our listeners just the extensive amount of time that you spent here in this ministry.
Well, 34 years are the best years of my life, really. I started in 67 as a University of Minnesota student down at 50 Willow Street as a BJ. And in 1980, I became manager of KTIS, did that for about 13 years. And then I was vice president for broadcasting until 2002. So a big part of my life and my heart is at Northwestern College and Northwestern Media.
And Wayne, if I was to ask you the question, what has been maybe the most significant change we've seen in Christian media between when you were doing such work here and where we are now in 2019, what would be one way you'd respond?
Well, I would say one thing is the way that Christian radio is now relating to the person on the street and really relating to people's lives. Secondly is the change in technology, that we not only have terrestrial radio now, we have internet and we have podcasts and we have streaming and so many, many new tools in the toolbox God has given us to reach people with the gospel.
Yeah, I certainly want to cover that a little bit more, too, just in terms of the ease with which we can communicate around the world. And Dr. Tomlinson, that's something that you've been a part of for the better part of your career as well. You've been in communications, and you also have some ties here at Northwestern.
I sure do. I spent 25 years as a professor at Northwestern in the communication and broadcasting department, and as such, had a lot of opportunities to work together with Wayne and the folks at Northwestern Media. So that was a terrific part of shaping who I am today. And I was there until 2009 when I left my position. I had moved into full-time administration by then and moved from Northwestern to take on the position as president of Bethlehem College and Seminary. And so 25 years of service at the school, you know, created many great friendships and many wonderful experiences with students. And so I'm thankful to the Lord for those years there.
Tim and Wayne, you're both involved in missions as well, obviously reaching people for Jesus around our world. And maybe, Tim, let's start with you. In terms of the way that that happens these days, it's very different than it was even maybe just 20, 30 years ago before the internet and mass communication and what's available now. It used to be you'd send people off and maybe you'd get some letter updates every 6 months or so, and then people would come back on furlough and update their home church, these kinds of things. How has missions changed in an era of communication like this?
Well, it's changing on multiple levels. Certainly the ease of communication has been a great benefit for people who are in remote locations. They can still communicate with their families back home, or they can get whatever kind of help they need more rapidly because they have the ability to communicate almost instantaneously through the various electronic means that are available to them. But it's also kind of, I think, changed in the sense that we've learned more about what works and what doesn't work in terms of missions. And so we've seen a shift, and Wayne can certainly corroborate this in our time together serving at Reach Beyond, that the model of Christian missions is shifting and changing and becoming much more tactical, I think, rather than seeing it as you go to one place, spend your entire life there, and hope by God's grace that something good comes out of it. Whereas I think we're able to move more quickly now, more nimbly, and put people in places where they can do the most good and in the most rapid way possible.
Well, and Wayne, speaking of this too, you're a living example of the difference in communication possibilities these days. It sounds like you're in Mexico right now, and if that's true, I know when I used to call Mexico 20, 30 years ago, it would cost me about $5 a minute, but here we are going across borders like this pretty easily.
It is. There's no extra charges for this call today. But I echo what Dr. Tomlinson has said. One of the things that has changed is, you know, 25 years ago, we would train North American or European missionaries. They'd have to learn the language, and they'd go in. It'd take them 5 to 10 years to learn the culture. Now our model is much more coming alongside of local indigenous believers, training them. They know the language. They know the culture. They already live there. And they're much more effective using media because they understand the culture. They understand their peers. And so they're much more effective than the old model of North Americans coming in and trying to learn all that. Secondly, is the whole digital thing where we could not put in radio stations. We can now go in digital media. I'm doing some work with Far East Broadcasting right now. And last year they received 900,000 letters from China. You can't put in radio stations there, but they're downloading content from the cloud into their digital devices. Two of the radio stations in Russia were closed down, but we know that we have about 2 million downloads every month from believers listening in Russia. So God has given us these new digital tools. Almost everyone in the world now has a mobile phone. And through that mobile phone, they can be in touch with the rest of the world, the Western world, and the Christian message in ways they couldn't have been before the Internet and before digital streaming.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating to watch the shifting and change in emissions. The two of you have been involved for an extended period of time to give our listeners a sense of that. We'll take a short break, and I would love to get back to your insights on the opening of this large Christian church in Egypt and what that means for us from a sense of missions and helping us as American believers know what's going on globally from a Christian standpoint. So more to come with Wayne Peterson and Tim Tomlinson next year on Faith Radio Mornings. Good morning. Chatting with Wayne Peterson and Tim Tomlinson this morning, two people who have significant ties to Northwestern College as well as Faith Radio and KTS Ministries and are involved in global missions. And Wayne and Tim, one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this morning was to give us some insight on the importance of what's happening in Egypt right now, specifically related to the construction of what is the largest Christian church in that area now. And I'm curious, Wayne, let's start with you on some of the implications of this, especially in a part of the world where the Coptic Christians have historically been persecuted pretty severely.
Well, these have been terrible. This has been a terrible decade for Christians in Egypt, where with the so-called Arab Spring, the Muslim Brotherhood has killed many Christians, burned down many churches, and made it extremely difficult and dangerous for Christians to identify with Christ. Under the new leadership of President al-Sisi, things have changed drastically. He has taken a strong stand against the Muslim Brotherhood. He said, we want to bring Egypt back to what it was 20 years ago. And he has committed, when Joe Rosenberg and I met with the president of Egypt in New York City, he invited us to come back to attend the dedication of the new church that the Egypt government is building as a signal to the Christian world that Christians are welcome and encouraged in Egypt. There are about 7 to 10 million Coptic Christians in Egypt. In addition, there are about 2 million Protestant evangelicals in Egypt. So there's a strong percentage of Christians in that country. And so the president invited a group of us, including Dr. Tomlinson and myself, to be there on the Eastern Christmas to to celebrate the dedication of the new cathedral that seats 8,000 people, and it was a magnificent time. The president of the country was there. Some of the top Muslim leaders were there. The Pontifical Pope was there, you know, understandably, and it was a marvelous celebration of the new day. The president has rebuilt 35 of the churches that were burned down by the Muslim Brotherhood years before. So they are encouraging Christians that Egypt now is a land of tolerance and encouraging Christians to live freely and safely and confidently in that country.
And Dr. Tomlinson, I'm sure as a president of a seminary like Bethlehem College and Seminary, that as a student of history and Christian history, too, this seems like one of these events that you had the chance to attend that would have, if we could fast forward 100 years and read scholars write about Christian history from 2018 and 2019, this surely would be maybe even a chapter devoted to the situation.
For those of us who were there. And it is a clear indication of a new day in the life of Egyptian Christians. And I liken it to what we read about in the Old Testament of, you know, the Persian king Cyrus, who was not a believer, but the Lord used him to help the Israelites get reestablished in Israel and also to rebuild their temple so that they would be able to freely worship. And in many ways, this seems parallel to me, that President El-Sisi, who was a devout Muslim, sees the importance of having an open and free society for people of all faiths, and therefore was willing to commit significant resources to show the Christians in the land that there's room for them, and that not only is there room for them, but that they want to encourage them in their faith and into practice. And, you know, time will tell whether this is going to have the kind of long-term impact that we all pray and hope that it will. But for sure, in the present day, this is a very encouraging sign in a part of the world where things have been very difficult and very challenging for Christians for many years.
Well, and Dr. Tomlinson, certainly there was more than just the Christian church being built at this time. There was a mosque that was being built and dedicated at roughly the same time as well. And we're talking about an inclusivity that can happen and a religious diversity in a country. In that kind of situation where there's historically been so much tension between these two faiths, how do Christians think about having the distinctive call to Christianity and even an evangelism in the midst of it without then recreating a whole lot of tension if they're going out and seeking to convert people to the faith?
Well, I think that the faithfulness of the Christians in Egypt is simply remarkable because how they persevered under intense persecution, as Wayne said, under the Muslim Brotherhood leadership. But it even really began before that. You know, going back to the presidents of the mid-20th century who were Muslim and made that a significant part of their leadership, which was to encourage those of the Muslim faith. And so Christians took certainly a back seat to Muslims in Egypt during those years. And then it, of course, rose to the point of intense persecution under the Muslim Brotherhood leadership era. So the Christians that we encountered and that we had the opportunity to interact with were so grateful to God for his faithfulness to them through all of that and to lead them to the point where now they see this fresh wind blowing in Egypt where they're given the freedom to worship and, in fact, the encouragement and the help on the part of the government to be able to rebuild their churches and to be able to worship and open ways without fear of reprisal. So I think what they see is this will become, maybe Arab Spring is a term that we know from history, but maybe this is a Christian Spring, where there will be opportunities for Christian witness in the years to come that will be unprecedented, at least in recent history, in that part of the world and in Egypt in particular.
And Wayne, we have less than a minute left now. I'd just be curious your thoughts on some of that, too, about the importance from your perspective of living a life that witnesses that sometimes is often, well, it's often more powerful than even words about our faith. The faithfulness of the Christians there really has a definitive impact, doesn't it?
Well, we're seeing cracks in the wall, not only in Egypt, but in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates and Jordan and other Gulf region countries' openness to the gospel and freedom of religion. I'm thinking of what Paul said in Romans chapter 9. He said, "Those who were not my people, I will call my people." And this is what excites me, to see that the places that previously been closed to the gospel opening up, and God's message is able to be there, and God is able to call people in Egypt my people. His heart is for the whole world and every nation and every people group. So this is just part of the Great Commission and seeing God's kingdom built here at home and around the world. And it's an amazing time in this 21st century what we're seeing.
Well, gentlemen, thanks so much for spending some time with us this morning on Faith Radio Mornings with your perspective and wisdom and insight. We look forward to chatting again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Peter.
That will wrap up our show here for Faith Radio Mornings for the 16th of January. Such an important point to end with, I think, as we think about missions and sharing our faith. And I think for those of us that struggle being verbal with our faith and looking for those places to try to explain the gospel, simply living a life of faithfulness and diligence and serving Jesus has a way of shining about us in ways that so often transcends words. And in those moments, then sometimes we do get the opportunity to share the hope that we profess. So I hope you have a great rest of the day here as you continue to follow Jesus, fixing your eyes on him, and we'll pick this up tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.